society, always be aware of your surroundings. They are among us. They always have been. The true criminal minds, killers, evil, and some are monsters. Welcome to True Criminal Minds with Douglas Boyd. True Criminal Minds gives you the stories of the most notorious and the most vile among us. We do not cheer them. Rather, we expose their evil. We do always advocate, lift up, and pray for their victims. Welcome to True Criminal Minds. All right, thank you for joining us today on True Criminal Minds. It's been a while since we have put on a new podcast, but we wanted to do one today. And today, we are going to talk about the infamous and sick-minded Ted Bundy. Almost everyone knows this story, but we're going to talk about it again. If you've never seen Ted Bundy's story, they have a great documentary on it, on him, on Netflix. This was truly a disturbed and sick individual. Everyone has heard of Ted Bundy. But if you haven't heard of Ted Bundy, you will hear about him today. Ted Bundy was a serial killer who kidnapped, raped, and murdered many young women and girls in the 1970s, and authorities think that maybe even earlier than that. He eventually confessed to 30 killings, but the number is probably much higher than that. Now, when you think of a sociopath, a maniacal killer, it's easy to picture an unattractive, disheveled, grotesque monster. Ted Bundy was none of these. He was handsome, college-educated, incredibly intelligent, very attractive, and he was a great communicator. He seemed to be the nice guy that you'd bring home to meet your parents. Most often, he would approach his victims out in the open, in broad daylight, where he would often pretend to be injured or disabled or needing help, or he would pretend to be an authority figure like a police officer or someone with the fire department. Oftentimes, when a good Samaritan would stop to help him, he would then knock them out, take them to a secluded location, rape and strangle them. At times, he revisited his victims, performing sexual acts with the decomposing bodies. Ted Bundy decapitated at least 12 of his victims and kept some of the heads as trophies in his apartment. On other occasions, he broke into homes and bludgeoned his victims to death as they slept. We don't really know when Ted Bundy started killing. He stated that his first attempted kidnapping was in 1969, but he didn't kill anyone until 1971 in Seattle, but that is probably not true. However, he did tell a psychologist, Art Norman, that he killed two women in Atlantic City in 1969. But his earliest documented murders were in 1974 when he was 27 years old. At that point, Bundy says that he had mastered the skills to leave minimal evidence at the crime scenes. Shortly after midnight on January the 4th, 1974, Ted Bundy entered the basement apartment of 18-year-old Karen Sparks. After bludgeoning Sparks, he raped her with the metal rod that he beat her with. Sparks remained unconscious for 10 days, but survived, suffering permanent mental and physical injuries. During the first half of 1974, female college students disappeared by a startling rate of one per month. Witnesses often saw a man with an arm sling asking women for help, carrying books to a Volkswagen Beetle. More and more women disappeared. On June the 1st, 1974, Brenda Ball, age 22, disappeared after leaving the Flame Tavern near Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. She was last seen in a parking lot talking with a brown-haired man in an arm sling. In the early hours of June 11th, 1974, student Georgianne Hawkins vanished while walking by the dorms. After Hawkins' disappearance went public, witnesses came forward to report seeing a man on crutches struggling to carry a briefcase. One woman recalled that the man asked her to help carry the case to his car, a light brown Volkswagen Beetle. If you'll recall in the movie Silence of the Lambs, this is how Buffalo Bill would get his victims to get near his vehicle. He would pretend to be injured. They would end up helping him and he would grab them. Ted Bundy later admitted that he lured Miss Hawkins to his car where he hit her with a crowbar. He then drove her 20 miles away where he killed her, then spent time with her dead body. He admitted visiting Hawkins' corpse on three separate occasions. As with all of these crimes, as they became public, fear began to spread. In the early 1970s, young people would often hitchhike. Hitchhiking dropped significantly, but investigators were clueless. They had very little to go on, but they persisted. On July the 14th, 1974, in broad daylight, Ted Bundy abducted two women from a crowded beach. Five witnesses described a handsome man with his left arm in a sling, introducing himself as Ted, asking for help unloading a sailboat. Four women refused. One complied, but when she saw that there was no sailboat, she fled. Three more witnesses saw him approach Janice Ott, age 23, with the same sailboat story. Sadly, she left the beach in his company, and she was never seen again. 4 hours later, Denise Laslin left a picnic to go to the restroom. She never returned. Bundy later admitted that he had both women together and that he forced one of them to watch as he murdered the other. But now, King County Police had a detailed description of their suspect and his car. Police posted flyers everywhere, desperately looking for answers. In August of 1974, Bundy moved to Salt Lake City, Utah, and dated at least a dozen women. How would you like to wake up one day and realize that you had dated Ted Bundy, one of the most prolific serial killers in history? New homicides began piling up, including two that were undiscovered until Bundy confessed to them years later. On September the 2nd, Ted Bundy raped and strangled a still unidentified hitchhiker in Idaho. On October the 2nd, he kidnapped 16-year-old Nancy Wilcox in a suburb of Salt Lake City. Her remains were buried near Capitol Reef National Park. October the 18th, 1974, Melissa Ann Smith, the 17-year-old daughter of police chief of Midvale, Utah, vanished after leaving a pizza parlor. Her nude body was found 9 days later. Postmortem examination discovered that she had lived close to 7 days following her disappearance. God only knows what this sick psychopath did to this poor girl. On October the 31st, Laura Aim, 17, disappeared. Her naked body was found by hikers. Both of these last two women were beaten, raped, and sodomized. Years later, Bundy described in gory detail revisiting their bodies and shampooing the corpse's hair and applying makeup to them. The murders and the disappearances would continue with no answers. A woman named Elizabeth Clawford called the King County Police and said she believed that Ted Bundy could be the man they were looking for. She was dating him, but they kind of just blew it off. But they did keep her information, thankfully. In December, she tried again, speaking with the Salt Lake City Sheriff Department, repeating her suspicions. Bundy's name was added to their suspect list, but at that time, no evidence except the car linked him to the crimes. The murders continued, became so many in Utah, Bundy began to worry that he could be discovered, and he moved his killing area to another location. On March the 15th, ski instructor Julie Cunningham disappeared while walking from her apartment to a dinner date. Bundy later confessed that he approached Cunningham on crutches and asked her for help. As she got to his car, he clubbed her, took her to another location, and he killed her. Weeks later, he would make a six-hour drive to revisit her body. Here's a bizarre twist. Elizabeth Clawther, I think I may be saying that wrong, but who believed that Bundy was the killer, who was dating Bundy, now thought of marrying him. What the? Are you serious? More women vanished. Some would be found, others would not. On August the 16th, 1975, Ted Bundy was arrested by a Utah highway patrolman. After a search of the car, the officer found two ski masks. The second mask was fashioned out of pantyhose. They found a crowbar, a pair of handcuffs, a trash bag, an ice pick, rope, and other suspicious items. Detective Jerry Thompson remembered a similar suspect and car from a 1974 kidnapping, and this young lady that Ted Bundy had kidnapped did the one thing that so many people in this situation do not do. She fought back, and as a result, she was freed from him and gave police a detailed description. Police now had enough for a warrant. They searched Bundy's apartment, but they could not find enough to make anything stick for the murders. But thankfully, they did have enough to stick on the kidnapping charge. Bundy bailed out of jail. I believe that the police blew it, and I'm going to tell you why. The police blew it. Bundy later said that the police missed a box of photographs that he had hidden in his apartment, photographs that he had taken of his victims, which he destroyed upon his release from jail. Had the police done their job the right way and found this box, so many other women would have been spared. Salt Lake City Police had Bundy now on 24-hour surveillance. Police again interviewed Miss Clawford, and she said that she found crutches, bags of plaster, a meat cleaver, surgical gloves, and a sack of women's clothes. Bundy was keeping trophies. When she confronted Bundy, he snapped and said that if she told anyone, he would break her effing neck. Clawford said that she would awaken at night and Bundy would be under the covers with a flashlight examining her body. She also said that Bundy had a lug wrench in the back of her car with tape on the end of it to make it a handle. Gee, I wonder what he used that for. In September, Bundy sold his Beetle and the police impounded it. FBI techs found hairs matching samples from Karen Campbell's body. On October the 2nd, Bundy was placed in a lineup for the kidnapping charge and he was picked out. There was enough evidence now to charge Bundy with aggravated kidnapping and criminal assault. Bundy was bailed out of jail by his parents, and amazingly, Miss Klompfler allowed him to stay with her while awaiting trial. You gotta wonder, I don't understand that. She knows that something's off with this guy, and she continues to hang out with him. Maybe she was just afraid of him. In November of 1975, the three main Bundy investigators, Jerry Thompson of Utah, Robert Keppel of Washington, and Michael Fisher of Colorado, met in Aspen, Colorado. They exchanged information and compared notes and agreed Ted Bundy was their killer, but they needed more evidence. In 1976, Bundy stood trial for kidnapping. He was sentenced to 1 to 16 years in prison. In October, he was found hiding in the bushes at the prison with a full escape kit. Inside the kit were road maps, airline schedules, and a Social Security card. Later that month, Bundy was charged with Karen Campbell's murder. Bundy was then transferred to Aspen, Colorado. We're going to stop there and hold on, folks. I'm telling you, this is about to get crazier. Tune in with us next time on True Criminal Minds as we continue the bizarre case of serial killer Ted Bundy. Thank you so much for joining us on True Criminal Minds. We were glad you were with us today. Man, the case of Ted Bundy is bizarre, isn't it? Have you ever seen such a crazed individual? Thank you so much for joining us. And if you enjoy this podcast, please consider subscribing to it. Invite your family and friends as we delve into the minds of those that seem so irredeemable, those with a true criminal mind. I'm your host, Douglas Boyd. We'll see you next time.